Hi everyone, and welcome to this live Q&A with Michelle Hutchinson and Arden Kayla. Michelle is head of advising at 80,000 Hours, before which she set up the Global Priorities Institute at Oxford University. Whilst completing her philosophy PhD at Oxford, she handled the operational setup of the Centre for Effective Altruism, CEA, and was the executive director of Giving What We Can. Arden is a researcher at 80,000 Hours. She also holds a PhD in philosophy from New York University, where she specialised in ethics and attitudes towards time. So you can submit questions in your name or anonymously using the box to the right-hand side of this video. You can also vote for your favourite questions to push them higher up the queue. We'll try to get through as many as we can in the next hour. So welcome, Michelle and Arden. To kick us off, what do you think is the most interesting thing you're both currently working on? Michelle?
Thanks so much, Sim. Well, the thing I've been doing most recently actually is getting our newest advisor, Habiba Islam, up to speed, which has mostly meant doing a lot of advising alongside her, which has been a joy, both because I get to watch her do it and hear a wealth of her experience, and then also because I just really enjoy getting to talk to so many people who are really trying hard to help the world as much as they can. Broader than that, the team, particularly Jenna on our team, has been thinking a lot about how to get some of the benefits of advising while being more efficient than simply having one-on-one calls. The kinds of things that this includes is we did a podcast with Rob earlier on in the year, which was released about a month or so ago, I think, discussing some of the things that often come up on the calls, because way more people can listen to the podcast than I can talk to individually. So the hope is that will be really useful for the community. And then I've also been thinking of more broadly about what kinds of things could be useful for people. For example, a lot of people say that they find the preparation for the calls pretty helpful. And the questions we ask for that are actually relatively short and simple. They're mostly think through what your different options are, what the pros and cons are, think about what you're most suited to, and then figure out what your key uncertainties are. And I think a big thing stopping people from actually doing that is not difficulty finding those questions, but is that it can feel like a pretty daunting task to get started on your own. And so I've been thinking through a bit how to help people do that kind of thing. For example, one of the things I think can be really helpful and has been for me in the past is having an accountability buddy and having someone with whom you sit down and do that, whether that means, you know, we're going to meet up and then we're both going to sit and write our answers to these questions and then compare, or whether it's someone who you can say, I'm going to send you this document by next week. Would you mind looking over it and seeing whether you think I've missed anything?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I found accountability buddy is very useful in like all aspects of life, not just in this, in like getting to do more exercise and professional goals, for sure. Arden?
Thanks. So I think probably the most interesting thing that I've been working on is trying to broaden some of the coverage of that 80,000 Hours has on different problems and career paths. So we have sort of these problem profiles on issues like biorisk and AI that we think are like really important issues, and we sort of write about like why we think they're really important and the kinds of things that you can do. But recently we've been trying to think about other problems that might be as important as those that like we just haven't looked into as much, and we, you know, our backgrounds have like, or like there just hasn't been as much research, at least from an EA perspective, on them. So we've been like compiling this list of other problems and writing sort of like short blurbs and talking to people who know a little bit more about it and are kind of trying to like set up a sort of like almost like a, I mean, you could sort of think of it as a research agenda. I hope that we end up researching a lot of these problems a lot more, but these, sorry, I should say some examples, things like great power conflict, things like surveillance and, you know, the different sort of uses that it can be put to, or even safeguarding liberal democracy. So these are sorts of things that don't really that are seem to be sort of ignored by the things that we usually have talked about in the past, but we're trying to like expand into a bit. And then kind of in the same genre, we're trying to like think more about alternate career paths that we think could be really exciting for more people to pursue besides our priority paths. So our priority paths are things we've like usually focused on the most. And those are things like going into AI safety or building effective altruism. But there's like a bunch of other careers that seem pretty exciting. And so we've been also compiling a list of those. And these are things like being a historian focused on like progress trends or like civilizational collapse, which seems like pretty important for informing people's priorities and their models of the world. Things like information security, which could be useful in a lot of like emerging technologies areas. And just trying to investigate those paths a little bit and give people like sort of like links to like further reading so that people can learn more about them, even though we haven't done like full write-ups on them and haven't investigated them that much. So yeah, I think that's probably the most exciting thing that I'm working on.
Yeah, I think this question leads on sort of really well from that. So what are your thoughts on the diversification of EA career paths? I think there's certainly a feeling among some people in the community that only a few career paths are truly worthy.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things that I'm most worried about in the community at the moment, because I do hear quite often people feeling like there's a specific smallish number of organizations that they would really like to work at. Often ones that are explicitly effective altruism branded or identifying. And I think that's just a really big problem for the movement in general, because there are very few organizations which are explicitly effective altruist. And they don't have most of the power in the world, and they don't, they aren't the place where we're actually going to make the most difference. And I think, yeah, there's probably a bunch of different kinds of things going on here. And one of them is that it's really difficult to know how you can have the most impact when you're exploring a new area. And then you have this problem of, for a lot of different areas, you actually don't know whether you actually will have a really big impact. And that makes it pretty tough to know what exactly you should do and maybe do motivating, because you don't actually know whether you'll end up having an impact. And it does feel comparatively easier to have a role where there's someone saying, hey, this is the thing you should do. And I've certainly felt this way a lot in my career, and have been lucky to be surrounded by people who are saying things like, hey, it would be a good idea if you set up this institute. Don't you think that that would have a bunch of impact? And then had a go at it, and have a lot of other people who were able to give advice on how to do that and things like that. So I think we definitely shouldn't pretend that this is an easy kind of thing to do. And then there are other benefits to working at an organization where other people are thinking in similar ways. It might just be generally more pleasant. I found working within the university bureaucracy kind of frustrating at times, because it felt like I just had very different priorities from other people, and watching thousands of pounds being spent on something that I thought was comparatively not that important when I knew that the counterfactual was that money going to AMF was just pretty heart-wrenching at times. But I think this is what real change in the world is going to look like. It's going to look like a lot of different people working within governments, within intergovernmental organizations, working in big companies to figure out, you know, which of the companies that are actually going to have an impact on different kinds of things, working in think tanks, which are advising the government, that kind of thing. And I think we need as a community to figure out ways of making this easier for people to do, both by doing the kind of research that Arden's doing to actually figure out which of these things seems the most promising, and then also building community support networks to make it easier to work somewhere where you're the only person thinking in these kinds of terms, and easier to carry on going even when you're not sure if you're going in the right direction and you're like running really hard, but you're actually not sure if you're running at the right goal and things like that.
Yeah. I want to like add a couple of things to that. So I feel like it's maybe worth saying that, like, probably the fact that 80,000 hours has, like, talked about some career paths, like, much more than others has helped, like, contribute to this issue. And, like, but that's part. So, like, thinking about, like, AI safety or something like that, and that being, like, sort of seeming, like, really worthy, partly because, like, we talk about it pretty often. And I think, like, this is partly an artifact of, like, this being something that we've, like, thought about a lot and have, like, basically figured out that we, like, think it has a pretty good case for being, like, a relatively high impact career for, like, a decently large number of individuals. And the fact that we, like, know lots of people who are working in that already. So it's sort of this, like, snowballing effect where we're like, oh, we, like, know, like, this organization that's doing this cool stuff. So we, like, we'll talk about that more on the website because it's, like, something we know about. Whereas, like, a lot of these other paths that maybe are undervalued in the community right now, like, they're, like, less visible. And so that's, like, I think a big part of what's going on. I mean, it's also the case that, like, we highlight the, like, priority paths because, like, we think they represent, like, really good opportunities for impact. And, like, we're much less sure about lots of other paths. But that is, like, I mean, the question of, like, how to, like, do the most good in the world in your career is such a huge question. And, like, having, you know, we've as an organization been at it for like 7 years or something. And I, you know, personally been at it for about 6 months. And, like, next to that, it's like, obviously the picture is going to be super incomplete. So I think that's, like, part of what's maybe producing this dynamic, but I hope that, like, by talking a lot more about these other career paths in the future that, like, might be better fits for lots of people, we can sort of help to, like, you know, help the EA community, like, value those more and, like, help people feel encouraged to enter them and to, like, explore also widely, even beyond the things that we're, like, talking about on the, like, this, like, new list, which is obviously also, it's not exactly completing the picture.
Yeah, absolutely. And also when ATK was writing about these things, there were very, very few people working in this field. So it was a kind of push to get people to take this seriously for the first time. And now you can focus on other areas to get people to focus on them for the first time.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it too, especially maybe as part of the story with AI safety. Like, it's just like, oh, we, like, really need to, like, start filling out this field, and then it can, like, start attracting people also, like, maybe a bit more on its own too.
Mm-hmm. Great, thanks. So yeah, again, continuing. So how has the stability of your top career recommendations changed over time, and how confident are you that they will or won't change significantly in the near future, Arden?
Okay, so I feel like I'm not totally sure how much they've changed over our whole history. I think they've changed somewhat. So, like, for instance, I think 80,000 Hours used to talk a lot more about earning to give and now talks less about it and, like, wants to encourage people to do direct work or, like, consider it first, even though earning to give is still, like, a really good option for lots of people. I would guess that they're getting a bit more stable just because I guess I have some heuristic where, like, the more you think about something and learn about it, the, like, less often you'll, like, end up changing your mind when you learn something new. But that said, I think they probably will change in the future and maybe, like, really substantially. So I could talk about a couple of, like, things that would cause them to change. There's probably other things, but, like, so one thing is just learning more and, like, being like, oh, we didn't realize that this was a really good thing to do. And also, like, how to do it so that we can actually advise people about how to do it and not just, like, tell them that it seems like it would be good if they could figure it out. And that would probably change, like, the kind of thing that we have on the website. Also, like, the audience, it matters a lot. So, like, if the 80,000 hours, like, if we had, like, way, way, way more readers, of course, there'd be, like, all these, like, new segments of people that would probably, there'd be probably, it'd be, like, different what the best thing for us to recommend to, like, this larger audience would be, or, like, different segments of the audience. So that would change it. And the final thing, which is, I guess, the most, like, that I could think of is, like, a specific need coming up or going. So I think one of the more drastic changes, or drastic is not the right word, one of the more marked changes in 80,000 Hours' advice, I think, is, like, at some point, we talked a lot about operations roles at effective altruism organizations. And that was because there was like a shortage of people in these roles. And then like, we think hopefully like partly because of that, but also like other people's efforts, a lot of those roles got filled. So then we stopped talking about it as much. So that kind of thing could happen, or on like a larger scale, like you're talking about like a field getting built, that might also like make it less the case that it's a sort of bottleneck to like progress in that area, that not enough people are like learning about it.
Yeah, I think I agree with Arden that broadly I would expect our recommendations to get a bit more stable than they have been over time. And I think there's a couple of things I'd add as to why that. I think one reason is that we in the past maybe underappreciated how much effect some of our recommendations would have. So in the early days, we talked a lot about earning to give, thinking that maybe 10% of people who are thinking in these kinds of terms should be earning to give. And at the time, it seemed like very few people were thinking in these terms at all. So we talked about it quite a bit. And then it ended up that 8,000 Hours got kind of totally seen as the org that thinks everyone should do this. And then we kind of pushed back on that. And we're like, no, we didn't actually mean everyone. We actually meant some people. And then we kind of got a backlash effect of people thinking that we thought it was a bad idea. And I think those kinds of messaging things are pretty tough, and we haven't necessarily done them that well in the past. And hopefully we're getting better at doing that kind of thing. And I think operations is maybe in a somewhat similar vein to this, where we noticed that a few organizations were really struggling to fill their operations gaps, and that was causing them a big problem. And so, yeah, wrote about that as a problem. But there were fundamentally not that many organizations with not that many open gaps. And then I think the next EAG that happened after that, there was like 200 people that went to an operations workshop or something. And we realized that, in fact, we were really affecting a lot of people by saying these kinds of things. And so now we're, I think, a bit more careful about saying, like, here is approximately how large we actually think this gap it is and stuff. So I would hope that that would cause things to seem a bit more stable. Another reason, I think, is that we were really starting from a field where there was very little information. So, for example, when we first started, we talked a lot about consulting as a really important way of getting career capital. And I think a large part of the reason for that was that we talked to a lot of the charities that we thought were doing excellent work, like GiveDirectly, for example. And they seemed to be disproportionately hiring people from top management consulting firms, because those places train people well and they screen for really good people. And so we talked a lot about the importance of consulting. And as we've gone deeper into the evidence, we've felt like, oh, actually, well, probably there are things that you could do that are even better. But maybe the difference from doing something that's not that relevant and isn't skill building the same way that management consulting is, and consulting is like a big difference. And then maybe the difference between that and doing something that's even more targeted is a little bit less. And anyway, because we think that actually management consulting was still pretty good, we're much less going hard on like, no, guys, do something totally different, and much more going on, well, that was pretty good, but like maybe this other thing's even better. I think one thing that I'm thinking might goes slightly in the other direction is it kind of depends exactly what you mean by our recommendations changing. But I think something that feels very salient to me when I talk to people one-on-one is the difference between saying, hey, this area might be good, we'd quite like someone to explore it, and we don't know very much about it, and maybe it will turn out to be really effective, and maybe it won't, and maybe it will turn out that if you do it really excellently, it's really effective, but if you do it not that well, it's not that effective. Things like that. And being able to actually say, yes, we think that there are definitely some roles here which are very likely to be effective. And maybe you could start by applying to XYZ organization and Googling for organizations that are similar to that organization, and like giving all of this spelling out thing. So I think it's going to be kind of hard for us until we have a lot more detail on some of these paths for it to feel like they truly are our recommendations, because there's not that much that someone can easily grab onto to remember, unless they like already were, you know, maybe working in hardware or something. And they're like, oh, they've specifically said the thing that I'm doing is, you know, potentially really effective, and I'll go into it or something. It's a bit harder to grab onto if you're starting from, I'm a new grad who's happy to move in lots of different directions.
And I guess as the community grows, there'll be more people in each of these smaller niche paths, and then ideally maybe the same thing that can happen with AI safety, whether it becomes a bit self-sustaining. And yeah. I was there, as someone who went to Earn to Give on 80K's advice, I was pretty happy with it. And I think it does build a bunch of skills. And I sort of saw that whole arc of putting it and then the big backlash and then the backlash against the backlash. And I think it's just like nuance is hard and people get stuck with ideas they put out early. So I think it was a difficult one to manage. So on this kind of speaking about more niche paths, roughly what percentage of EAs would you like to work on 80K's sort of priority problem areas versus investigating the, you know, potential highest priority areas and then versus other things entirely?
So you're referring to this like list that I talked about at the beginning where we have these like potentially like as like these problems like maybe could are like as pressing as our top problems, but we're not sure. And then we also have these like other lists below them. So like, I think maybe this is what the person in the audience is like thinking of when they ask this question. So like those lists are things like, oh, these are some like more problems, but that seem like we think they're probably less promising than the like above list. And so it's like now this like long thing with like multiple sections. In terms of how many, so is it like how many, okay. So like in terms of how many people we would like ideally see working on these problems, I want to start by like, I like don't really have an answer to this. And I think the reason I don't have an answer, there's a kind of a lot of reasons I don't have an answer. I can sort of give like a stab at some like really rough thing, but like first to just like give context for why I feel like this is a really hard question is like, one thing is, it's like, what group of people are we talking about being allocated into like working in different problems? Like, mm-hmm. Is it the EA community? Is it like the people in the EA community who like read our site? Is it the people who like read our site like the most? Is it like future EAs? Is it like future? Like, there's all these like different groups we could be talking about, and like the allocation would probably be different for all of them. Like, you know, if we were talking to five people, we might say like, oh, maybe you all five should become global priorities researchers or something. But like, obviously we're not going to say 100% should become global priorities researchers for like a big group. So it's like, that changes it hugely. If we're just talking, even if we like choose an audience to like try to ask this question about, so another like complication is like, there's like the ideal allocation of people, maybe. Maybe there's an ideal allocation of people, but then there's also like the current allocation of people. And then like what we would end up like promoting the most would probably be the things that like tried to turn the like current allocation into the ideal allocation. So like, even if we thought that only a small percentage of people should like work on, let's say like one of these like other paths that we've been looking into, like becoming a historian, like if there are very few, we might like push it more, like promote it more, even if we think like altogether only a small number of people should work on it. So that like makes it like hard to, it's not always the like idea, the like relevant thing, I think, to like figure out what the ideal allocation is. It's like, which direction do we want to like try to like promote these sorts of paths in, or like which direction do we want people to move in? And I mean, finally, it like matters a lot on like the like characteristics of the audience matters a lot too. So like, if everybody were like really into pure maths, then like that would like suggest that like a much larger percentage we would want to be working in technical things. So like, we have to like learn a lot more about our audience too, and that will like always be changing. So all this suggests that it's like always changing and hard to say. But in order to like, I don't want to like completely evade the question, because I understand like, okay, you have this long list of problems. Like, what would you be like most excited to see like 100 people working on or something? Like how would you be most excited to see them allocated? And my like rough guess is that something like half or like more than half on like the things that we consider the highest priorities. So these are highest priority problems like right now, or at least that we know about, which are things like biorisk, building the effective altruism community, global priorities research, and AI risk. And then like a smaller amount than that on like things like institutional decision-making, which we are also consider priority problems, but like maybe less pressing or less like good to work on for as many people. Even though like for a single person, it could be like much better for them to work on that than like something that we consider a higher priority problem, but like maybe a smaller number of people. And then a substantial amount, but like hard to say how many, maybe 10% or something like that, working on these like other problems that we think could become like highest priority problems. But then also it's like hard to say, like if something is like, whoa, somebody discovers it's like really important and more people should be working on it, then of course we'll be like, oh, well then we would like want to make it into one of our highest priorities to like try to suggest that more people go into. So like that's also very dynamic. And then maybe like, yeah, a sort of similar amount on like everything else. That's like that's my like rough take and all of my like many caveats about why I'm extremely uncertain and also it like could change very dramatically.
Yeah, I think tough question. Totally depends on who the 100 people are and what their skill set is. And also in more people, yeah, doing a kind of niche area, they might make the case for it in fact being a higher priority area, or maybe make the case of like, actually, I think this is not that as important as we thought it was. So
dynamic. Yeah. So this is a really good point about this like long list. Like we're kind of like, okay, well, these all seem like they could be really important for more people to work on, but like we don't know. And some of them will probably like, will end up thinking they're more important later. And some of them will probably end up thinking they're less important later. And like that will depend on like how much we look into it, but also like if people go and explore and like write down like write blog posts about it, that like also helps. And like, so that like, that amount of change is, yeah, very good to know.
Great. And so this is the top rated question, which is, I find it a bit surprising, but what would you recommend to individuals from humanities background? I guess this again speaks to maybe the sentiment of like, oh, I haven't got a maths PhD, what do I do? Michelle?
I feel a bit hesitant to answer this because it's so broad. And I think the biggest thing to say is that I wouldn't want to have recommendations that are as broad as anyone from humanity thing. I think it's really important for people to think quite a bit about what types of things they enjoy and are good at. And we talk about this idea of doing a ladder of cheap tests to figure out what kinds of things might be suited to you. So the idea is that you figure out what things might plausibly suit you well, and then you do more and more expensive tests in terms of start off by reading a blog post about it. If it still seems good, then read a book about it. If it still seems good, try and reach out to some people to talk to about it. So I think I would want people to start with not just what am I studying? So I'm a historian and I'm within humanities more broadly, but also, do you find that you get all your energy from talking to people all day? Would you prefer to do a lot of writing and very little talking to people? Are you really excited about a fast-paced environment and you'd like to start a startup? Or do you actually prefer to be within a system where things are going at a more gradual pace? Do you think actually you might deal really well with a bureaucracy where it's hard to get things done fast, but you're spending a lot of your time thinking through how you can get other people on board with different kinds of ideas? And I think it's harder than I would have anticipated to figure out what kinds of things you're suited to. So I find my current job is a really strong example of this, where I knew about the kind of general idea of 80,000 hours career coaching for the last like 6 years or something. And I assumed that I wouldn't be a good fit for it, in large part because I'm not very gregarious. I tend to find parties and other kinds of networking events kind of difficult. And so I thought that I just wouldn't be at all well suited for a job where I was talking to people every day. And then it turns out that I really like talking to people when it's one-on-one and there's an agenda. And the real problem is navigating multiple people and not knowing what to talk about. And I really only found that out when I tried out for it. So I'm a particularly big advocate of think through in a fairly fine-grained way what kinds of things you might be a fit for. Having said that, I think that there are lots of different types of things that we could talk about here. For example, journalism and working in policy. And like I said, things like navigating bureaucracies, you might think that the kind of job I had previously working in operations in the Global Priorities Institute was fairly well suited for someone from a humanities background, because there was quite a bit of writing the kinds of documents that would be persuasive to people, and thinking through analytically what kinds of steps needed to happen for things. So I guess I'll put it over to Arden to talk a bit more about some of these specific things.
Well, I think I think you have said most of the thing that I would want to say, which is something like there are tons of different paths that could be great, and it would be like, obviously we don't like all like humanities people going into like the same thing or something. I guess maybe one thing to add is like, so there are like jobs that are like way harder to get if you don't have a technical background. And so like, and I think because of that, people can be like, oh, well then what should I do? But I think that actually still leaves like, I'm not confident at all saying most jobs, but like probably most jobs, and like including like many that would be like really good ways to do good. And these like might be things that like we, you know, we have this like historian, like other like path that we're excited about, or like other things in global priorities research, but, and like a whole bunch of other specific things. But I guess it still feels like we've sort of carved the world, like, you know, carved off like a certain percentage of the world that like requires a technical background, and like everything else is left. And I mean, maybe that's even too strong, because like, I do know people who've like come from humanities backgrounds and like still like done well in like things that you might've thought you needed a more technical background for, often through a lot of self-study. But sometimes like learning more on the job, like somebody who came through like philosophy and not like the technical kind of philosophy, who's like now in finance, and that's like, and like involves a lot of math. And so even like the thing I said is probably a bit too strong. But yeah, that's sort of what I would like to add.
Everyone that has a technical background uses it, so I don't use the fact that I had a degree in physics at all. I never planned to. I just did some physics and was like, oh, that's not really for me, is it? And then it. So I think that also is a sign that actually, like, it may sometimes appear like most jobs need a background, but that's really not true at all.
Great. Well, that should answer, give some kind of indication to, I guess, the majority of the audience. So advising is obviously something that one of several things that 80,000 hours does. I think people have a bunch of questions on advising. 80K obviously can't coach everybody in the world. So what's the best way for people to sort of empower themselves and to get help with their career? And maybe an example of that is, you know, what are the most common things people ask in advising, or what's the resources that you give people?
Yeah.
Michelle, sorry.
Sorry. I think the first thing to say is that basically everything that we say in advising is up on the website somewhere in our research, and we're continuously trying to switch things around and make it as easy to find as possible. I think it's really difficult to make something that's easy to navigate, particularly as different people navigate things in different ways. And I think it's pretty overwhelming when you're trying to plan your career, just how much stuff there is out there. And so I think it is like kind of useful having someone who knows a bunch of the thing, like try and put the right resources in your direction or something. But I do want to emphasize that we're not saying anything secret, it's all on the website. So I encourage people to just like poke around it a bunch. Then I think another thing that we're doing in advising that's pretty for people is providing a soundboard for thinking through their plan of someone who is coming from the same direction, has similar values, and is just trying to optimize for the same kind of thing. So I very much recommend finding other friends within Effective Altruism who would be happy to read over your plan. And I think most people, in fact, would be happy to read over their friends' plans, and that just can provide large part of this value. We've got a couple of things online, a decision tool, and then also a longer article on making tough career decisions, which tries to lay out what kinds of questions you might find it useful to ask yourself, and how you might therefore lay out a document in terms of putting forward, like going through what your plans are and what the benefits and disadvantages are, and tries to nudge you in the direction of things like put more options on the table rather than fewer and things like that. And then think about what your key uncertainties are and what you might want to most find out about first. So it seems like it might be good to go through one of those, write up a document, send it to some friends for feedback. Then I think another thing that I often recommend people do is reach out to strangers for advice. I think it's pretty scary to do that, and it feels like people are obviously not going to like it. But I've certainly been surprised in the past how much people have been happy to do this. One of my favorite examples was when I was doing a grant application for the Global Priorities Institute on a branch of ethics called virtue ethics, which I knew very little about. And I wrote up a grant proposal on this and wrote to, I think, the three most famous virtue ethicists in the world. And two of them wrote back and said, yes, we're happy to look over your grant proposal. Here are some comments, which I just thought was so generous. And I feel like this actually isn't that much of an outlier. If you write to someone with a very clear, here is why it's you specifically I'm reaching out to, here's my specific smallish ask, people are often happy to help. So I would definitely recommend, when you've got to a point where you feel like you've read a lot of the different things and you have some specific question that you're finding it hard to get an answer to, you think someone would know, reaching out to them and saying, hey, you think you could answer my question here? And then another thing is what I had mentioned earlier is getting someone to help you out in terms of keeping you on track and working out someone who's happy to check in with you somewhat regularly and have conversations about how are things going, particularly if you're in the midst of something like applying for jobs, because it actually is just very hard to continue applying for jobs and be rejected from a bunch and not knowing what your future is going to look like and putting in all this work that feels like it's not going anywhere, particularly if people aren't even writing back. And so having people that can cheer you along and help you with what thing are you planning to do this week and how are you feeling about it and things like that. And if you feel like you're, you know, don't want to impose on your friends or don't know people who are that well suited to it, I think this conference is probably a great place for finding other people who might want an accountability buddy who's in a similar area to you or is also an effective altruist or something like that. And I guess one final thought is also to do with applications is that I very often am encouraging people to apply more and more broadly to roles. So because this is such a difficult process, there's definitely a temptation to not apply to too many things, and people end up feeling very disheartened when they've gotten a couple of rejections. But unfortunately, getting a good job just does look like making tens of applications. And then also people often kind of skew in one direction. So maybe they're underconfident and they just don't apply for options that would really be reach options. Or maybe they're really quite confident and they're sure they want a job they really like. So they only end up applying for jobs that are very difficult to get and where, you know, 1 in 100 people are likely to get it or something. So I want to encourage people to apply at both ends of the spectrum. So you should be applying to at least some jobs that you're pretty convinced you won't get, but would be great if you got them. And then some jobs that you're pretty sure you'll get so that you know that you won't end up jobless at the end of the day.
Yeah,
Sorry.
Just echo the point of people being willing to help. I find this incredible and amazingly true that we can reach out. I mean, we certainly do it at the organization I work at, where we reach out to like very important, very busy people and say, hey, would you mind taking time out of your day to talk to this person who, you know, might become a major donor, and it, you know, to the space in general, not specifically to their org. And I just find it amazing how people make time, even if it's, we're asking for like an hour of their day, which is quite a lot. I'm sorry, Arden, I interrupted you.
No problem. I was going to jump in, even though I know this was a question that was like pointed at advising with just a couple of like small things. So one is I noticed that we keep saying like, oh, blah, blah, blah is on the website. And like thought I would just like say very quickly where some of these things are. So a lot of the most important stuff is on our key ideas page, which you can find on the homepage, but like including like lots of career strategy stuff, like some of the things that Michelle was talking about, which I think are like closer to the bottom of the page because it starts out with like talking about different global problems and sort of like moral philosophy. And the problems are sort of in the middle of the page. So I just wanted to say that. And also that if you want to, like, we actually just put out a podcast interviewing Michelle and about some of these issues that like covers a bunch of the stuff she was talking about in more depth. So that might be good to listen to if you want to hear more.
Great. Thanks, guys. So one question that's sort of also at the top is, what would you recommend to people in low middle income countries? Now, my read of this question would be, you know, what would you recommend to people who want to stay in low, you know, in the country that they're in, rather than move to, say, the US or the UK, where it feels like a lot of these jobs are based? Arden?
Okay, so like the first thing I want to say is just that we have like mostly researched how to do like our career paths are mostly, we've mostly researched like US and UK opportunities. And this is especially true of the job board. So like, or maybe not especially true. I think it's true for kind of throughout the site, except for the very, very general stuff and the problem profiles, which are often like, these are global problems and you can probably work on them in multiple places. But oftentimes the career reviews are very focused on the US and UK. And that's just because that's where most of our readers are. That's where most of us that work at the org are from. And so it's like, that's the sort of natural context, like a natural place to start. And so the short answer is something like, I don't have a great answer for this. And like which I did, I guess like to say something slightly more useful perhaps, is I think that we have a bunch of career reviews that you can find on the website on the, like, it's like, there's like a page that lists like all our career reviews. And I think some of them are a bit broader and give more like options for like different places. And some of them, it'll be like similar, there'll be like analogous things going on in different countries. And I think that might like be like, have like some useful advice, but yeah, basically. And I think the problem profiles too a little bit, but I basically just, you know, I wish we could say more on this. Maybe Michelle, I don't know. At least I wish I could say more on this.
You know, I think I feel, unfortunately, pretty similarly to Arden. I guess, therefore, I would want to do a bit of a plug towards the kinds of things that I said earlier. So what I probably should have said in that answer, which is that I think because choosing what career to go down is such a big and difficult decision, there's a real feeling that it would be great if other people had answers. And unfortunately, people generally don't. And I think I've definitely done this too much in my own career, which is find people who seem to have similar values to me and are really smart and then be like, what should I do? Unfortunately, these things are super hard. And the answer often frustratingly is trying to do a lot of this like testing things out and reading up and things. And so, I also wish that I could answer this better. And in the meantime, would like to encourage people to do some of these other exploratory things.
Yeah, I mean, ATK can't have researched everything. So I think it's kind of fair enough that you guys don't have answers for everything. So a kind of fun question, what is your favorite podcast episode? Michelle, you can say the one with you in it.
That's my least favorite.
This is a hard question.
I actually really enjoyed the one with Cassidy Nelson recently, where she went through a whole bunch of different possible interventions to help with bio risk, because I just really enjoyed how concrete it was and also how targeted at the most effective things, and then also that she explained it really well.
Yeah, that one was like very pleasingly concrete. It was like 1, 2, 3, 4 like
right
things that we can do. Yeah, that was awesome. I think this is like I really liked the our first one with Paul Cristiano. That's like one of my favorites, I think. It was like kind of dense and I had to listen to it twice to understand it. But it was like really like kind of wide ranging. And I feel like I learned like a lot from that one. So I really loved that one.
I agree. There was a lot of rewinding and re-listening in that one.
Yeah. I was like, Rob, can you just ask, like, can you explain that in a different way? Like, some of us, like, need a little bit more context.
Yeah, at the other end of that spectrum, I really enjoyed the Dani Hernandez one recently because it was both about pretty difficult stuff that I felt like I didn't know that much about, and also because Arden did continuously push him on, do you think you can explain that in a different way? For those of us that don't know what that means, can you explain it some more? And I was really grateful for that because I feel like it's really hard as an interviewer to be happy saying, I'm not, you know, sure what that is. Can you explain it more? Or I'm simulating the audience not knowing what that is rather than just being like, I'm doing the right thing and going along.
Yeah, the benefit of having somebody who is new to it on the podcast, I guess.
Great. It's that we're coming to close. The last few questions. What's the most important thing you've updated on in the past year, Michelle?
I think one thing is how actually really hard it is to explore different roles, even within something that sounds on the more concrete end of some of the things that we recommend people do. So, for example, the British government has a fast stream, which, you know, it's much easier to tell someone, hey, the British government, that has quite a lot of power in the world. Also, there's this fast stream, which will allow you to try out a couple of different areas and will put you fairly quickly on a track to having a leadership-ish position. But there's just so much complexity within that to do with what actual placements do you get on? Is it easy to actually get a policy placement instead of a project management placement? When you've gotten into it, what area should you be going into? For example, if you think that transformative AI is going to be a problem, should you work at the Office for AI, or is that mostly trying to build AI in British businesses and so not that relevant? And then there's lots of just, you know, small parts of departments that are useful that you wouldn't have guessed. And it's difficult to know, you know, should you try and go into a department immediately if you think that department's going to be important, or should you move around as much as you can, things like that. So the thing I wanted to mention here is that Hype has set up, which looks at high impact jobs within the British civil service, and super grateful that that exists. It both has a bunch of listings of jobs they think are really effective, also broader descriptions of ways of going about this, and they're happy to talk to people who are in the civil service. So I think, yeah, I guess that's not a very happy update for the year, but I think, yeah, it's even harder than I had thought to figure out what's most impactful when you're in a like newish field.
And I mean, it's harder when things aren't static, right?
Right.
When things change. Arden?
So I like got much more heavily involved in EA. Like, well, I guess like I started working at 80,000 hours only 6 months ago. So I feel like I've learned a bunch of stuff and so like updated in a lot of ways that is like maybe not like, like maybe even to just catch up with like people who had like already thought a lot about certain things. But I think if I'm thinking about like more like new stuff, something that I hadn't thought about at all, and I think a lot of people hadn't thought about it at all, is that like how valuable it might be to like invest both money, but also like if we can, like in some sense, like invest labor by like building a movement to like work on things when we like know more about what we should be doing. And like there's this like term for it, like patient long-termism, which is like sort of biding your time and like trying to figure out like how can we actually, like when should we actually act or like sort of spend our resources to make the biggest difference that we can. We have like a podcast on this with Phil Trammell. And I'm hesitant to say that I've updated in the direction because I'm not really sure what I believe, like, sorry, the direction of like, we should sort of save more and like spend later instead of now. And in the case of careers, this would mean like building more career capital, or maybe like building the movement so that like later people can do more when like some sort of like really pressing thing comes up. So I'm hesitant to say updated in the direction because like I'm really not sure what I believe, but at the same time, like I hadn't even considered it before. So I've definitely updated in the direction in that I'm like, this could be the right thing to do. From like not really, you know, thinking it at all. So that's like one big thing. That was like, wow. I was like, it felt like very different.
Great, thanks. And I think we'll have the final question be, if people could leave this with one takeaway, what would you want it to be? Michelle?
I think mine would be the get a buddy. Find someone who is going to be your go-to for keeping you on track with what you would like to do in the world. And that could be, I feel like in my case, it's basically my manager who's happy for me to discuss with him things in my broader life and not just work that I want to keep on track. But in other times, it's been a good friend of mine where we did this for each other. I think this is a really great underutilized thing.
I think probably that like there are a lot of different ways to make the world a better place and that we like don't know about very many of them probably. And so like one like good place to start to thinking about like a greater diversity of those ways might be this list that we put online with these like other paths that we're excited about. But like, that's like, we went from, you know, that we add like five more things and when really there are probably like a just like huge number that could be really exciting and that like the best thing for any one person might be something that like we have no idea about. So I guess like think about how many different ways there are to do good and like maybe start with the like other paths list and like use it for inspiration.
Great. Thanks both so much for your time and advice today. I think that wraps up our session. Thanks.
Thanks so much.